On the Bechdelcast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdelcast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdelcast. My name is Jamie.
My name is Caitlin.
And we have the podcast that you're listening to right now, and it's about women and how they are portrayed in movies.
That's right.
Usually not very good, but sometimes okay.
Sometimes okay, sometimes good.
Good?
Like the movie we're talking
good.
About today.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend about this, the fact that it took us this long to talk about this movie when it's been our header on Twitter
since the beginning.
Whoa! Sometimes I like to think about when we met up at that coffee shop to talk about this and we still didn't know how to talk to each other.
Right.
I know. It was so weird.
Yeah, I was like, I emailed you and I was like, do you want to do podcasts with me? I have an idea.
It's literally an email. And now I tell you every time I like pee. Yeah, what a beautiful friendship.
I know.
Hey, quick question. Since we're talking women's stuff,
mm-hmm.
I did something last night where I was like, would this hurt? Like, could it hurt? I was hoping it would help, but then I was like, could it actually hurt? Expired Vagisil wipes. Where are we at on that? I Googled it and they were like, it can't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe they're just not as potent as they would be. What is a vagisil? Is it like an itch?
It's
an itchy wipe?
Yeah. If you've had a weird week, sometimes you need one.
Yeah.
And I guess I hadn't had a weird week in a long time, but I was just like, something's going on down there. And then I blamed myself. I was like, what did I do? I certainly didn't fuck this week. What happened? And then I was like, you know what, Jamie? You're wasting time blaming yourself. Where are those expired Vagisil wipes? And then I used them. And today, no itching, no scratching.
Oh, good.
Feeling good.
I'm so glad. Have you ever had to throw away expired condoms? Because I've had to do that on a number of occasions.
That's
the implications of that. Yeah.
No,
I don't have sex regularly enough to use the condoms that I stole from the Boston University Health Services office.
Well, I'm allergic. As you know, I'm allergic to latex, so I really need to plan.
Oh, I didn't know if I knew that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The first 2 years of sex for me was like, I guess this isn't for me because it hurts and I need Vagisil wipes afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out I was allergic to latex. And also, I'm a huge advocate of the sex plan. I'm talking weeks in advance. Like, I'm not one for the spontaneous meeting of genitals.
Mm-hmm.
So I plan so far in advance. I'm like, hey, get some non-latex condoms, like really.
Some goat skin?
Is
that a thing?
Sheepskin. Not
oh, sheepskin.
Skin. But then
I want to use a goatskin condom.
But here's the tricky thing is one time when I was briefly dating that vegan, he was like, I can't get a sheepskin condom. That's not vegan.
What'd you do?
I don't know. He figured something out.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, that's a
there was a condom
question.
Present when I arrived for the sex meeting 3 weeks later. So all's well that ends well. Well, that's your public health announcement at the top of this Bechdelcast.
That's right.
Yeah.
Should we introduce our guest?
I would love that.
Super. She is a writer, an actress, also a podcaster because she has a podcast called Love Alexi on the Nerdist Network.
Not just any podcaster, an Aristotle associate.
Yeah.
So this is high caliber guests.
Uh-huh.
This is important.
Yep.
I'm very excited.
And it is Alexi Wasser.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, my God. It was so hard to try to be quiet and listen to your intro. I'm tearing up and crying. I was like, man, I want to be respectful.
I know. Our lives are very sad.
No, they're hilarious. And I'm thinking with you, Caitlin, expired condoms doesn't mean you're not having sex. It just means you're having unprotected sex.
No, I'm not having
sex. Okay. I'm not even having any sex. But I'm just saying that, cooler implications.
Caitlin, cooler? The raw dog, Durant.
The raw dog.
They call her the raw dog.
Oh, my God.
You ever call it raw dogging?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have for sure said the sentence, I only raw dog when I'm in love before.
I've never said that, but I'm going to start. Holy shit.
It's a big moment for, I'm like, that's how I have to tell someone I love them for the first time. I'm like, I only raw dog when I'm in love.
I only raw dog when I want to be in love.
Right. I'm like, I'm not in love, but I would like to raw dog. So let's see if we can just
go on this journey.
Shout out
this
to
gap.
My mom who listens to every episode. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, she's cool.
What's her name?
She's Lori. Chill.
Lori's raw dog.
My
for
mom.
Sure.
Oh.
Oh, she, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the result. This
Multiple
is incredible.
Times.
Oh, man.
My mom listened to our podcast for the first time over the weekend because she, quote, does not understand how podcasts work.
Oh.
It's as simple as a click, mother. And she came back with, you've met my mom, and she's like a problematic figure. Jill Loftus. I mean, how would you describe her? Because I have years of coloring.
I mean, Jill, she's a perfectly wonderful woman. Again, I don't have her as a mother, so I don't have quite the same perspective as you. But, you know, she seems like she's a great lady.
Okay, so here's the thing with Jill. Is also, Alexi, we're all drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade that Caitlin brought.
And Aristotle got iced.
And he did. Okay,
we iced him.
We'll post the vid on the Twitter because he did an amazing ice. Like, he just, no breaks. Mm-hmm. It was, I'm going to upload it to YouTube and hope that ice culture comes back someday. But my mom listened to the podcast for the first time, and her MO my whole life has been like, let me say the nicest possible thing about your friend and then say, and you were fine too.
Oh.
She's like, Caitlin is so intelligent. And I was like, I know, she's really like, she, and my mom was like, she went to grad school, right?
Which, like, is like not a marker of intelligence at all. But
for Jill, I mean, Jill's like, and then at the end, she was just like, you and the guests were fine too.
I was like, was this for the Gili episode?
This is for the Gili episode.
Oh, God. Should I see that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't seen, what's the Elizabeth Berkley movie?
I haven't seen Showgirls either.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
We got to talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm sick of vitamin. Can I have another one of these things? Can I get weirder? Yes. I'm sorry. I'm coming off at 2, okay? Because I do have to drive to my mom's house after this. My mom's house.
Also, my mom and I got in a fight about Grace and Frankie.
Oh, no.
Why?
About what?
It's so Jill. Like, we were talking on the phone the other day, and she was like, just so you know, I watched Grace and Frankie first, and now you're, like, co-opting my show. I was like, you're so wrong. Like, I watched Grace and Frankie first. And she's like, oh, yeah? Well, I watched it in 2014. I was like, well, joke's on you. It wasn't out in 2014,
oh,
you
my
dummy.
God.
And then I was like, I hate Robert. I hate Martin Sheen's character. And she's like, because you don't understand him. And then we got into a whole squabble. And then I hung up, and then we called back, and we're like, the important thing is we both like Grace and Frankie.
Yeah, that'll keep it on the air. That'll keep it on wherever it is, the air.
I feel so strong. Like, when you tell people you love Grace and Frankie, they do think you're kidding at first.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, like, an extreme love for that show, people wouldn't automatically expect.
Pardon me,
excuse my mics.
Oh, God. Well, I think it's an important show because there's older women are represented.
Yeah.
Finally. My mom loves it. My mom is the one who turned me on to it.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, and I'm so happy that it's like a representative of like, oh, wow, women are still allowed to exist at a, you know, past a certain point. So
yeah, and be super funny and like the focus. And I hate Robert. Hate Robert. Sometimes you're a Grace. Sometimes you're a Frankie. Sometimes you can be a Saul, but like never be a Robert or get out of my life.
Hey, what if I think. Sometimes you're a Thelma or a Louise?
Ooh, transition.
Whoa. I like your style. I like your style.
Love it.
So yeah, that's the movie we're talking about today.
This is probably the longest it's ever taken us to get to.
Oh, really?
We're always fucking it all up.
No, we're always trying to like top our record of how long it takes us to get to the subject.
Look, me taking on the blame. Like a woman does.
No, yeah.
Me
don't.
Being like, I'm sorry, you guys, I'm so sorry.
We're sharing like the victory.
Okay, good.
Right.
Yeah.
This movie came out in 1991. Directed by Ridley Scott, written by Callie Khoury. I am not entirely sure how to pronounce her last name, but Thelma Louise, I'll give the recap, the Caitlin's famous recap, baby. Beep, beep,
beep. I have a good feeling about this one.
Oh, me too.
About this movie or this recap?
This recap.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
I don't know why, but I just, like, I'm really, maybe it's the mic's hard.
Could be that.
I feel really ready for this recap.
Okay, so we've got Thelma. She's played by Gina Davis. She's a housewife. She has a shitty husband. We've got her very good friend, Louise, Susan Sarandon. Louise is like, hey, let's go away for a weekend. I've got this cabin in the mountains. Let's just go and let our hair down and it'll be great. On their way, they stop at this country bar and this guy named Harlan zones in on them. And he's like, oh, hey, being girls, you're pretty girls. And then he commits some horrible acts of sexual assault against Thelma. Mm-hmm. And Louise is like, hey there, motherfucker, how would you like a bullet in your chest? And then so she shoots him because he's about to rape Thelma. And then they're like, oh, shit. Oh, my God, we killed a guy. So they've got to flee the scene. And they drive and they're like, oh, my God, what do? We got to figure this out. They stop at a motel. Louise is like, all right, I'm going to go to Mexico. I'm going to have my boyfriend wire me some money. That's what we're going to do because we can't go to the police. Because why? No one will believe us that he was raping you. We were getting away. It wasn't really self-defense anymore. There's no proof. This is just how the world works. We got to figure out a different strategy. So they basically become fugitives from the law. They get the money wired to them from Louise's boyfriend, Jimmy. But they meet up with this guy, JD, a.k.a. Brad Pitt, who's super hot and cute. But he's a little thief, and he snatches all the cash that they had.
That's how I describe him. A little thief.
A little thief.
Yeah.
Hey!
And then,
why'd you do that?
Why'd you do that, JD?
You little scamp.
He gets away, and he takes all their money. So Thelma takes matters into her own hands, and taking actually a little tip from JD, robs a grocery store and gets away with a bunch of cash. So now they're like even more wanted criminals. And they've got the cops on their tail. The cops have gone to Daryl, which is Thelma's husband, and Jimmy and different people. And they're like, oh my God, where are these ladies? We got to track them down. What are they doing? And they just keep committing more and more crimes.
They can't stop.
They can't stop. They fuck with a police officer. They blow up a guy's gasoline hauling vehicle rig.
Were we supposed to say spoiler alert before any of this?
Oh, no. We assume that everyone has seen the movie. Yeah,
I'm
we're going to spoil it. The movie has
If
been.
You're triggered by spoilers or activated by triggers, please tweet us.
Please tweet us.
They keep committing more crimes and getting in more trouble. And then at the end, they're like, you know what? Let's go all the way. And then they drive off a cliff.
Amazing, famous, cathartic film moment.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who have never seen this movie, and I think it's because they know how it ends. So,
yeah.
Like, I don't need to see it.
Exactly.
I know how it ends. It's been spoiled. But you should see this movie if you haven't, because
I wouldn't even qualify it as a twist ending.
It's
like,
so
it's
good.
Just the ending.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so great. I can't believe it took me so long to watch it. I watched it for the first time when Caitlin, when you and I were emailing, or I emailed you, and I was like, let's do this movie.
You hadn't seen it at that point?
I had not seen it. And then I was like, Devil Wears Prada or Thelma and Louise?
But yeah, I just couldn't believe it took me so long to see this movie and how much I loved it. Oh, and there's also one aspect of it where it's like the Gina Davis character when she's like with Louise, and it comes out, and it's so subtle and smart how they do it, that the reason why Susan Sarandon's character was so activated, triggered, what have you, and shot the dude who was trying to rape her best friend in the parking lot, was it all ties back to the fact that Susan Sarandon's character was raped back in the day.
Right.
In
She's
Texas,
also a victim.
A victim of rape. So in a way, so the reason why. So then you learn later on at the end of the movie, that's why you understand at the time why she shoots the guy, because he's a fucking misogynist piece of shit rapist dude. Mm-hmm. But then later it's even like, you know, more layered and special.
Which
you
is
understand.
Why one of the reasons why this movie is so good and so well written. Like, this movie has so much restraint, and it's like withholding of information and then releasing it. And it's like, it just keeps building, and every scene like heightens from the next scene. It's just such a...
Until there's literally no choice but to drive
right.
Cliff,
literally.
Which is amazing. And that informs the reason, you know, and Susan Sarandon's character running from the law and not thinking she's going to get, you know, they won't believe her. That's informed by the fact that they didn't believe her when she was in Texas, right?
Right.
So
she probably tried to...
Yeah.
So this is a movie about two women who are like, we know the system's going to fail us, so we're not going to even try to play by their rules.
And they just, like, rebel against it for the entirety. It's so cool to watch. But also, it's so, like, the premise of it is so frustrating, or we're, like, frustrated on their behalf, because the only reason that they're, like, acting out in this way, and they're so, like, there's so much anger in this movie, which I love, because you never see, like, rape is so often used as a plot tool in movies as to, like, to explain, like, that's why she's fucked up, because she, you know, and but this movie, like, uses that real experience so intelligently, and basically that experience colors why they don't trust anyone. And it's just, like, it's so well done, because almost every movie mishandles it and uses it as a plot tool over, like, a real character element that informs so many of their decisions that is not directly addressed. But when you really think about it, you're like, oh, that totally makes sense that that's how she would see that.
And sometimes I feel like rape is portrayed, I don't know if you guys agree with this, where it's like, it's portrayed as this kind of semi-sexy thing in this weird male-gazy way. That's been done before. I don't know. They talk about that misrepresentation where it's like, I'm not saying every single time there's a rape scene in a movie or a TV show,
it's not necessarily sexy, but sometimes it's kind of provocative. You know, there's like an element of that where you're like, oh, wait, are we teaching men who are watching this? This is kind of like
right.
sexy.
Just like shown in a way that it doesn't look like, oh, a crime is taking place.
Yeah.
It looks like how you'd film a sex scene, which is not how this should be. And that's another thing is like the way that film is rape is staged is very stark and it looks bad because mm-hmm. it's bad. Like, yeah. which is such a simple thing, but it so rarely looks bad because we're so close to the characters and we're, you know, you're seeing like disembodied body parts as opposed to faces and just the reality of what this looks like from a distance, which no one ever shows. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's hard to look at, but it's all like, it's supposed to be, it's wrong.
Right.
It's,
who wrote yeah. it?
Kelly Curry.
Oh,
who
sorry.
Is...
Kelly Curry.
I don't know what she's, do you know what she's written since then?
No, I'd have to look it up.
Ellen Barkin was supposed to play one of the parts. Did you hear that?
No, mm-hmm. I didn't.
She turned it down. I don't know who she was supposed to play.
Interesting.
Oh my God.
I love the casting though.
Me this, too.
The casting is great.
Like
all my current issues with Susan Sarandon aside.
Wait, what are they? What are those? I don't know that.
She was essentially a Bernie bro.
And then she said, don't vote for Hillary.
She's a part of the problem.
Yeah.
But she does very well in this movie, and it was a long time ago. For context, I think the context of the year this came out is really interesting. And mm-hmm. I was reading some of the reviews when it came out in 91 of, like, critics were not sure what to do with this movie. And they're like, it looks feminist, but it actually isn't for A, B, and C. And this was right around the Anita Hill hearings with Justice Clarence Thomas and like all this stuff was going on.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have? It's a Time article where, you know, this was around the time where there were just starting to be women in the House of Representatives. And like the year after this, 92, a.k.a. Jamie's year, was called the Year of the Woman, a.k.a. Jamie's year.
Yeah.
And it's Aristotle's year, too, right? Hell yeah.
Aww. You guys are young.
You guys.
Little babies. And then I also have this cool quote from Kelly Curry that I found. She said this last year, 2016, for the 25th anniversary. She said, as a female moviegoer, I just got fed up with the passive role of women. They were never driving the story because they were never driving the car. It's like, love it, Kelly. Okay, that's the Jamie context check.
Sure, got it. It's kind of fascinating that this movie came out when it did, because the reasons they have for not wanting to go to the police and them not believing them and they don't have enough evidence and people will essentially victim blame her, like, oh, you were asking for it because you were dancing with him cheek to cheek all night. Those are still the things that we face today.
Today, yeah. Like, it has, unfortunately,
nothing has. Basically, women often do not report when they are sexually assaulted. If they do report it, they are often not taken very seriously by law enforcement. The perpetrators of the sexual assault are often not brought to any sort of justice, or they do not face any consequences legally. And this is still happening today, so it stands to reason why they would also, in 1991, when this story was taking place.
I can't imagine what it must have felt like in 1991
right.
if it's this bad now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. Like, I was debating on the way over. I'm like, do I want to talk about this? Do I not? Because, Caitlin, you know. But, I mean, I went through a similar experience like that in college where I was assaulted by my own boyfriend. And, I mean, it's still going on. It's been, like, 4 years of just, you know, years of, like, don't report it. Don't say anything. There's no physical evidence. No one's going to believe you. Then starting to talk about it. And sure as shit, no one fucking believes you. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're still with this person and that's the whole, you know, abuse cycle. And even when I went to the police a couple of years ago, it was, you know, I didn't have any physical evidence. What could they do? Or that's, you know, what you're told. That I was in college at the time. You tell the school, they don't do anything. And it's still like it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where now, to the point where now, like the most recent thing that's happened is I started talking about it. And then was told by this person's legal representation to, like, shut up or they'll retaliate legally. So it's like, I mean, it's not any easier now. It's just, it's crazy watching this movie and thinking in any way that someone could like view Louise saying they're not going to do anything about it and have doubt about that, because look at the Brock Turner case. Like, the system habitually fails victims to the point where a lot of people feel like there's no fucking point in doing it, because it's like such a traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. And odds are you'll lose money and pride and everything, because they just fucking
not to mention
it.
all the backlash that the victims get when they come forward in especially very public cases the Bill Cosby case. So many people were like, you're just doing this for money or attention, and it's like, what? Ugh. How could you even possibly fathom that that's why a victim is coming forward? So it's bonkers. These problems still persist over 25 years ago when this movie was made. You know, who knows how much worse it was back then.
Listen to your friends.
Yeah. Believe it when women come forward about these things.
It's not like a fun thing to just say.
So we are getting very heavy on a podcast that's usually quite light and fun.
But
to be fair, we are still drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade.
We are.
Yeah. I'm getting sad drunk now.
I wanted to address this because it's relevant to the movie and it's important, but we can also talk about other aspects of the movie. For example, the characters. We've got Thelma and Louise. Another reason this movie is so well done is that the writer has written two very distinct and developed characters. You take Thelma. She and Louise both have a sense of humor, but just getting down to the very specifics of it, Louise has a more dry and sarcastic sense of humor, whereas Thelma is kind of goofier. Louise is kind of strategic and methodical in her thinking, whereas Thelma is more carefree. And
well, because Thelma's younger, right? I think that she's supposed to be, right?
I'm not entirely sure.
Regardless of age, I feel like it's sort of established earlier on that Louise is the more worldly of the two, and is less, I'd hesitate to say naive, but has more worldly, I guess.
Sure.
I'll just leave it at that.
Also, I felt when I was watching it, when I see Thelma with Gina Davis, she's in that dysfunctional, unhealthy relationship with her husband. Mm. I feel in a way she's assuming the same role in her relationship. I mean, it's healthier, but she's assuming the same role in her friendship with Louise, Susan Sarandon's character, because it's again, she's kind of being bossed around or kind of, and lesser, more gentle, it's more loving for sure, but in a sisterly kind of way, but it's still.
She kind of relies on Louise, tell me what to do.
Yeah, because that's how she lives she navigates her life, and the same thing in her friendship or whatever.
She's the beta.
Right.
She's the beta.
She's the beta, baby.
Motherfucking beta.
But and it just goes to show that these are just two very distinct and multidimensional characters.
Mm-hmm. Who grow and change.
They do. They are dynamic as fuck.
I love them. Oh, when Thelma, I thought it was so smart how they, by the way, it makes me love Ridley Scott because he made this movie. I was just oh my God, I can't believe it. He's so with it. But so Thelma has a fling with the nubile, dewy, ripped, fucking gorgeous Brad Pitt. An early Brad Pitt is already gorgeous, we know. Yawn, snooze, whatever. But he's so nubile and sexy and hot as fuck. Oh, my God.
I love the word nubile. Let's bring it back.
It's back, baby. Gina Davis has this, fling. She's this hot, sexy rendezvous, sex romp, whatever, in a shithole motel with
Couldn't be
scoundrel.
More rooting for her during this scene.
Oh, my God.
Just yes.
So she's fucking getting fucked by whatever. Sorry, I don't know if I can curse on your podcast.
Yes, for sure.
So Gina Davis is getting slammed by Brad Pitt. And during that rendezvous, she goes, well, how do you rob these places? How do you hold up a place, or whatever, a liquor store or whatever? How do you make your money? And he reenacts what he does, when he robs a liquor store. And then later, after Brad Pitt steals all the money from the girls, Gina Davis retains and remembers the lesson that Brad Pitt, the thief, gave her when they were having their fucking sex romp. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, hey, wait a minute. I know what to do because I learned from the guy who actually stole the money how to do this. And then she goes and robs the liquor store. And it was just so smart. It just all makes so much sense. It all pieced together. It's funny. It's And to see the evolution of her character, where Gina Davis is like, I think this is my calling. Where she's realizes she's a fucking badass.
I mean, she's been so repressed by Daryl, her awful husband, that the first chance she gets to kind of break free, she's like, this This is me. This is who I've always been.
Oh, who's Susan Sarandon's boyfriend, husband, guy?
His name is Jimmy, and he's played by Michael Madsen. Oh,
another Stone Cold Fox.
Who is Kill Bill.
Oh, yeah. Really? Oh, who?
He's Bud.
Is he married?
Oh, let's check.
And also,
amazing.
Do these men exist anymore? Because I have a crush only on 60-year-olds now. I have a crush on... Am I allowed to talk about this? Am I allowed to have talk about my crushes?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Tim Burton... Brian Koppelman, who's married, and I would never date a married man. I'm just saying, it's like these are my celeb crushes or people I'm aware of who I think are handsome. Uh-huh. Anthony Bourdain. Okay. I think
interesting.
Come on, these men. Like, so do men like that Madsen guy or whatever.
Madsen.
Do they exist
did
now?
Did get puffy.
Oh, so did Vince Vaughn, which is such a bummer.
Yeah, it's so weird when men reach a certain age and they just get puffy.
Yeah.
I'm body shaming them.
Good. Let us do that to them.
We get reparations, baby.
Yeah.
Stop getting so puffy. Ben Affleck in Gone Girl. Puffy as fuck.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
He's a cheater.
It's the puffiest movie of all time.
I'm going to, like, so really... Puffy. I'm bringing down, like, the highbrow nature of your podcast.
Flush to,
like,
Oh, I love that you call our podcast highbrow.
I'm like, can we talk about crushes?
We talk about dates we've been on with magicians.
Oh, that's true. Mentalist,
spent
no less.
The entire Boogie Nights episode just yelling, hogs out!
Hogs out, baby!
Hogs out!
We are not highbrow.
Hog means private?
Hog means the old dude.
But I would be remiss if we didn't talk about old crushes without a quick shout out to Al from Molina.
Sure.
My beefcake.
Oh my God, is he married?
Probably. I don't know.
My old man crush is, which is like not at all original or anything like
tell
that.
Me. But, oh, Jeff Goldblum.
Well, yes, Goldblum? But Paul Newman, but even as like an 80-year-old man, I would have still rolled
Salad
around
boy.
With his, using his vinaigrette as lubricant.
Oh my, that's an infection waiting to happen. We can't do
I
that
I will
for
just
you.
Use yeah. some expired Vagisil wipes.
You need some fresh ones.
Also,
sure.
Alfred Molina has been married to his wife for longer than I've been alive. I want to sit on his face.
You do?
I want to sit on his old face.
That's how he dies.
I want to kill him. With my love.
Our conversation is not passing the Bechdel test
oh
right
God.
Now.
Sorry, is it? Oh! You know, I told you I was going to devolve your whole fucking feminist ideal. Oh my God, I'm all like, anyway, I have a crush. You guys need to talk about it?
I would propose an asterisk to the Bechdel test, which is talking about fucking Alfred Molina should pass the Bechdel.
No, you're talking about murdering. Oh no, I changed it into smothering him with your love puss. Yeah. That's totally passed the test.
And honestly, he might just like drown. It might not even be a smother.
All right, we're done. Anyway, moving on. I'm all
I do want to talk about the sex scene between JD and Thelma.
Oh yeah.
Where like the first shot you see of that is just Brad Pitt's very chiseled hot body, and it pans from his face down to his like abs or maybe vice versa, but like you just see like a lingering shot on his body, and like you also see shots of scantily dressed Thelma, but I like that it's like equal parts like hot naked bodies together,
equal parts for unequal pay.
I bet
Gina Davis made more money on this movie than Brad Pitt did. It could be because his character is only on screen for, 10 minutes.
And look at that. When it happened.
Right. I bet he got paid more still. That's the problem. Whatever, guys. I'm sorry.
Stop a pun. Wait.
Well, that reminds me of the scene where they've been pulled over by the cop later on in the film, and he takes Louise back to his car, and he's like about to run the license plate number, and Thelma comes up, and she's like, hey, I'm going to stick this gun in your face. You're going to get into the trunk of your own car. But the whole time they're doing it, they're just like profusely apologizing.
That's cute.
It's
funny.
And like part of me is like, I wish they didn't have to apologize so much, but it is like kind of played for comedy, and I do enjoy it, because I like would also probably do the same exact thing in that situation. I'd be like, I'm so sorry that I'm stealing your gun, and I'm so sorry that I'm locking you in your trunk. And they're just so polite and apologetic about it, and really enjoy the scene.
That was
That was so, because like that's closer. I mean, as fun as it would have been to have them go like,
Scarface and be like, get in the trunk.
That would not, like, yeah.
That's not.
It wouldn't play because, I mean.
That's not how they're conditioned.
That's not how they're conditioned. And also, these characters are very new still at being these, like, rogue outlaws.
Renegades.
So it's more believable that they would be like, oh my God, like, I'm so sorry, police officer.
And they shot holes so he could breathe in
there.
Right. Wasn't that nice?
They're very considerate.
Because we're maternal. We're women. We can do it all. We can have compassion.
And then, exactly.
Later on, there's a scene which is like, I would argue maybe a little out of place, but I also don't mind that it happens, where that guy comes up on the bicycle and he's like smoking a joint.
And that was about racism.
Right. I mean,
he's like, I'm not going to help you. Exactly. You fucking copper,
he's like,
racist
fuck. Fuck the police. And he just blows his like weed smoke into the air hole of the cop, and then he just rides away. And I was like, yeah, I'm glad that happened that.
That's a detail, because we were talking before the podcast started, Caitlin and I, about writing stuff and whatever. And I feel like that's an example of like a scene in a screenplay that could have easily been cut.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, no,
let's leave it.
We're leaving it in.
I'm glad they did.
Yeah. Me too.
Did you know that Kelly Corey is married to T-Bone Barnett?
Oh, sexy.
Kelly Corey also made the Nashville reboot. That is her most recent career move. Go, Kelly.
Yeah.
So T-Bone started working on Kelly's Nashville, but then left after 13 episodes. And everyone was like, is there trouble in the T-Bone Kelly marriage? The world was a buzz. And then T-Bone came out and was like, listen, I love my wife. I love working with her. However, you know, they need a healthy distance. And also, he had only agreed to 13 episodes. So the fact that he didn't continue is not a reflection on T-Bone. And in fact, is just a testament to the fact that Callie's got it. Go on, T-Bone. Work on Inside Llewyn Davis. We're not worried. And Callie was like, see you later. See you at home.
Yeah.
Love you.
It's like Katie.
They have a great relationship.
Katie,
is what I'm saying.
Katie Sagal and her husband on Sons of Anarchy. He created the show.
There
She's
you go.
In the show. Another, you know, and beautiful it's, relationship.
At some point, it's just like,
here we go again.
I don't want to commute to work with you. You know.
Yeah.
Now, are we supposed to learn from the Bechdel test, or is the Bechdel test supposed to learn from us as women? Because here's the question, because I find myself in my day-to-day just going, how much time do I waste talking to every Starbucks, every barista at every Starbucks, every girlfriend I have about whatever relationship turmoil I'm going through, like my dating issues, my conundrums, whatever. And then I go, oh my God, at what point is it about me venting and processing and turn into just a time suck of me obsessing over relationships and men? And then, because it is a real thing that exists in real life, and that's why I feel like it's shown in movies of women talking about relationships. That's not all we talk about, but it's like, I've got to remember this in my life. It's going to be a lesson to me in the future.
Right.
So when I start dating again, if I ever do, not to always not talk to. About it.
I mean, having a life that passes the Bechdel test.
Yeah, not me. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, my life fails the Bechdel test.
No, but it doesn't, because it's like the Bechdel test isn't about only talking about things that aren't men. It's just doing that at all. So really, every woman's life passes the Bechdel test. If you call your mom and you're like, can I use expired Vagisil wipes? Already, I've passed the Bechdel test for the day.
Yeah.
Because that's about the opposite of a man. That's about expired feminine products. So it's like, you know, no one's life is going to pass the Bechdel test. I'm certain Caitlin and my text conversations would not pass the Bechdel test.
Oh, really?
A lot of the time.
For sure. Yeah. It's just like, you know, whose Instagram are you on? But
what?
Like,
what do you mean?
Oh, we're just
guys?
Talking about
it's
boys.
Oh, see, because it's so fun. Because we're multi.
It is.
Wait,
yeah.
Aristotle, do you ever talk to your guy friends about girl stuff? You don't? Are you wasted?
I'm boring.
You're boring.
He's fucked up on a Smirnoff.
Yeah, always he chugged a Smirnoff ice. Aristotle is the sweetest baby boy we've ever known.
I got there was a page that put up a joke of mine this week. The kind of page where you're like, someone's gonna hate me for being a woman. And you can't win, but I was looking forward to the variation on which I could not win. Because it's like, once you know you're going to get fucking roasted, it's like, well, now I'm just strapping in and who has the best burn, you know? And at the time, this was like a picture of me about a year ago when my hair was way shorter. And the comment said like some variant on like, who does this short haired bitch think she is giving me sex tips?
Oh,
and it was from a woman.
Whoa. Oh, isn't that the worst when it's like a woman hating woman?
I looked at her profile. She was a long haired bitch. So,
oh my God. Oh, no.
We're just like female dogs
not,
trying to tell
answer.
Our jokes.
That's not the answer.
Actually, that reminds me of a story beat that I didn't pick up on until this very recent rewatch of Thelma and Louise, where the waitress who serves them like clearly knows Harlan. He's the guy who attempts to rape Thelma.
Oh,
she seems to know that he is
a rapist?
Like, maybe we can only speculate as to
she
like, what
trust
degree.
Him.
Right. Mm-hmm. But she like she knows that he's kind of trouble because then whenever Hal, Harvey Keitel, the lead investigator, is questioning her.
Oh, yeah, Harvey, that is
kind she's of she's saying,
cute.
Like, he, like, I'm surprised this didn't happen sooner. It was probably his wife who shot him. Like, she clearly knew that this was coming to him, and we can maybe assume that he has sexually assaulted other women throughout her
I'd say safe bet,
yeah. So I was a little bit bugged by the fact that, like, I don't know, she didn't warn these women, that she wasn't more of, like, an ally to them. We're like, stay away from him. He's trouble.
That's true.
That's a tricky gray area, yeah. though, because it's, like, especially if you're at... Because even now, it's, like, if you put yourself in that sort of position where it's, like, you're a stranger to someone... And you don't want to alarm them to the point where they want to leave your place of business. But it's also, I don't know. It's yeah. hard, that's like a hard interaction to have. But it was interesting to see the fact that it's like, oh, this, for me, that was like more of a plot indication of like, this is not his first assaulting women rodeo. I don't know.
Also, I did like Harvey Keitel's character.
Yeah, he's really gunning for them the
whole
time.
He was gunning for them, like, in a positive way. He's not trying to shoot them with a gun. Like, yeah, he was just like...
He's not trying to gun them down. Yeah. He's trying to gun them
up. Yeah, trying to gun them up. It does make sense. It totally makes sense. But yeah, he was... But I appreciated that. And, I mean, I had other stuff to say, but this Mike's Hard Lemonade is making it all so foggy.
Everything's blurring.
I just
you got me
like,
right where you want me. You
gulped
guys.
Down the like, the warm dregs of like the can, and it was like so syrupy and alcoholic.
Oh, I loved it. I loved every bit.
My indie band is called the Warm Dregs.
The Warm Dregs.
The Warm Dregs.
The Worm Dregs or the Worm.
The Worm Dregs. No, you worm. Might be distracted by my tattoo, which is a worm.
Oh, are we having a third? Is that your
this
second?
This is my second.
Oh, never. Oh, I was like, so excited.
Wait, I'm down for a third.
Let's do a third. Okay, so you want a third? You're having a third. He's having a third.
Come
Aristotle.
On.
Oh, my God. Aristotle just took his top off, Channing Tatum style. We're not even talking about that
How
movie.
How did he do that when he's harnessed into his chair? We've
by the way,
him.
I don't know if all of us are alt-flavor girls, because I definitely am. I have bangs and I live in Los Angeles or whatever. Like, I'm like, kind of like alt or whatever. But do you guys feel, I know we're talking about Thelma and Louise, and we'll get right back to it.
We will.
But you know when you watch, what's the movie Channing Tatum?
Oh, Magic Mike.
Are we all guilty of like, well, I'm not normally into those kind of meathead guys, but like, oh my God.
They
so
seem like
hot.
They're having so much fun.
He's just so hot. I mean, don't you feel like, didn't you lust after him a bit?
When oh, for sure.
Oh my God. I couldn't believe me. I was so disappointed and like exhilarated.
And that's not like the chiseled, like Grecian, that's like not my type it. But
what is your type?
He's having
beefcake.
So much fun.
Oh my God, you guys,
beefcake.
We are failing the Bechdel cast.
Beefcake
Bechdel
and
test.
Small
oh my God,
men.
I ruined it. It's me. I take all this. Okay, but go on, yes.
Beefcakes and small men all the way. That's my MO.
Beefcakes and small
I like,
men.
Yeah. Yeah, I like frail pretty boys.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh my God.
We're like never in competition.
Give me one of those, girl. Oh my God. I have like.
We're out of control. No, we're letting our hair down just like Thelma and Louise.
So much fun.
We're
letting our
free
class fly.
To die at the end of the podcast.
Let's drive off a cliff. And by drive off a cliff, I mean fuck a guy named Cliff. And then...
No!
Oh, let's talk about
Let's talk about feminism and
movie?
Real shit.
What's the movie?
Thelma.
Oh, my God. I'm, like, losing the... I'm losing the thread. What is it called? I'm losing the narrative. There's an Avril Lavigne lyric that it describes exactly what I'm feeling right now, but I can't remember it.
Let's find it.
It's do you know that song where
he was
she's
a skater
like,
boy?
No, is that an Aerosol song?
No, I used to have a crush on a skater boy. Shout out to Steven Massaroni if you
he's
still
like,
want to date me when I'm 14. You're the skateboard. You're so cute.
You got so tall. You got too tall for him.
I got too tall for like
everybody.
Literally every romantic interest in high school.
We're both the same height, you guys. It's true. We're both like 6 feet tall.
Do you remember that website, Post Secret?
What?
Post Secret?
No.
Was there a book that was made at like a coffee table book?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember.
It was a
yeah.
website that was like really, really, really popular when I was in high school. And you would make like a collage on a postcard and it would say your secret on it. And then you'd mail it to this guy and he'd put it on his really popular website. And one time I got my postcard onto Post Secret, but they're all anonymous, so you don't know. And it was about how I was 5'11", but I had a crush on a boy who was 5'3". And I made this collage of, like, legs and then a really small boy. And I sent it and they were like, this is a great secret.
Oh my God. He needs to know. We should call him. Is he still alive?
He's still alive. He might be dealing heroin with my cousin.
Oh, cool.
So oh my God.
Wow. No. He was so cute in 2007 though. And it's like, I wish we could make it work.
I mean, we are derailed, and I will just throw this out and then throw it right back to you, Caitlin. But I'm listening to Candice Bergen's, Candy Bergen, for those in the know. But her autobiography about her love affair and marriage to Louis Malle, like he made My Dinner with Andre and a bunch of other movies.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, their love story is incredible. Googled photos because I always like to know what the people look like who are experiencing a better love than I might ever have. And
love
she,
that.
She's way taller than him, and it's kind of inspiring.
Daniel Radcliffe and his girlfriend, too. Sometimes I look at pics of them, and I'm like, you know what? It's possible.
It's possible. Caitlin, what were you going to say? Oh. Caitlin's like, get out. Get the fuck out.
I love small men so much.
I wanted to talk about the... like the really gross perverty truck driver who they encounter a few different times.
Yes, yes.
So, well, first of all, I think the first time they encounter him, he says something like, "Oh, I'm your muff driver.
Ew!
I'm your stormtrooper of love." And I just want to say that if someone said that to me, I'd be like, swoon. Someone that I like just like used a Star Wars reference as a pickup line on me, it would work. Is all I'm saying.
I'm just getting a feel for what the bar is here.
It is low. And but then like and then they encounter him a couple more times and the third time, rule of threes, guys.
Rule of threes. Wow. Yes, yes, yes.
Love it.
They're like, pull over, let's do this. And then they yell at him for being gross and disgusting, and then they blow the shit out of his truck in a huge explosion. It is one of my favorite scenes of any movie ever. Can we talk about how this is the third movie we've discussed on this podcast that Stephen Tobolowsky is the guy who plays Ned Ryerson.
He plays Ned Ryerson in all the movies?
In every single movie. He's always in character
as
Ned
Ryerson.
That is so cool. He's so method.
Like Harvey Keitel is like, I want to go help these girls. And he's just like, I'm Ned Ryerson.
Oh my God.
It's a great scene.
Hey, I have a relevant comment. I haven't had one in about 30 minutes.
Yes,
so I feel like I'll have one.
Another variation on apologies from women.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry about that apology.
I'm not sorry. One of the cool things about this movie, all Susan Sarandon, Bernie Bro shit aside, is that this movie seemed to really activate, for lack of a better word, like a lot of pro-women activism for Susan Sarandon and especially Gina Davis, who has since started the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media, which is like this really cool organization that does a lot of studies about how women are represented. I mean, it's like perfect for us to talk about. Mm-hmm. And there's a great thing from last year. I've got some stats for you.
Yes.
Cool. Here are the stats from the Gina Davis Institute on Gender in Media. For every one female speaking character, there are three male characters. Women only make up about 17% of people shown in crowds in live action and animated movies, and just about 7% of directors, about 13% of writers, and about 20% of producers are female. This is a statistic, unfortunately, from last year, not 1991. So it is very cool that this movie seemed to really resonate with the people involved with it, as well as the people who saw it.
I've like made it a life's mission to have everyone I know see this movie. Like, I'll be
really?
Like, people are like, what do you want for your birthday? And I'll be like, watch Thelma and Louise.
Oh my God. That's I'm going to tweet about it after this. Wait, by the way, does Gina Davis produce movies? Does she have a production company? Because she should if she's.
I'm not sure.
I found out about her and what you're talking about when I saw Misrepresentation, which every person should watch.
Yes,
Misrepresentation.
Yes, great.
I was weeping. Yeah. I think it's on Netflix. It was on Netflix, but you can find it. Just Google it.
The only thing that bothered me about that documentary is that it places a lot of emphasis on the movie Twilight as like
it
being
does?
A good
no.
example of like
abuse. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
The fact that it acknowledges it at all as a movie that should be like, oh, look how, I mean, it was directed by a woman, but that movie is garbage and that character is garbage. But apart from that, if like you set that aside and just watch the rest of it, it is a very good documentary. So check out Misrepresentation.
Yeah. Misrepresentation. Yeah. Linda Opes. Have you read her book? She wrote a book called Hello, He Lied. She's like a an old school badass producer, woman producer. And she, I was working on something with her and she was like, Twilight, you don't understand. She's in a this is dysfunctional. It's like her only options are choosing these two men. And I was
insane.
I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. They're so cute. Like an idiot. I was
The point in, because my mom, classic Jill, she owned the box set of the Twilight books and was like, Jamie, you've got to read these. They're so romantic. And I did enjoy some of them, but you reach a point in the
Aristotle's leaving
where Aristotle is straight up.
How did he get out of his handcuffs? We cuffed him to the chair.
He escaped his shackles. But there is a point in the Twilight books where the girl, what's her name, Bella, she is broken up with by Edward Cullen, and then there's a whole chapter that is just empty pages to represent the fact
read
that
New
she's
Moon.
Now
I know
on
yes.
the inside.
Wait, you read the books?
I read the books, and there's empty pages to represent how she felt, which is nothing.
Oh my
God! For months,
God.
Like 3 months.
I need to make this movie that I wrote that I forced Caitlin to listen to the story about. We got to find Gina Davis. Yes. She better have... Oh my God, I cannot believe... I didn't even realize there were empty pages in a book in
There's
the Twilight
actual
book.
There's empty pages to indicate 3 months of a young girl's life.
I mean, but the funny thing is, heartbreak is real.
Heartbreak is real, but it's like...
Come on.
But you also go to school.
Yeah, you don't process it by just having complete emptiness.
Yeah, I throw
life.
Myself into my work. That's how I, you know, take my shame and my sadness and I put it into something.
After
That's
my
why I'm doing
first,
this podcast.
After my first breakup, I really threw myself into the school play.
You nice. Did? Which one?
For sure. It was, I played the classic woman part. I played a sassy secretary.
Sassy secretary.
But like, I like owned it, you know? Here's what Susan Sarandon said last year. After Thelma and Louise, they predicted there would be so many films about women, but it never happened. And I thought that was an interesting thing for her to say, because I would wonder, I mean, I don't know what the stats were on how well women were represented when this movie came out, definitely not well, but I wonder how that compares to now where...
Are they represented well now?
No.
Yeah, that's the thing. No. Don't you feel like movies from the 70s, 80s, and 90s did a better job of representing like fierce, fucking
in some
intense
of them,
women?
Well, like between like Alien and even like pre-production code movies from like the 30s.
The women's movies pre-production code are fucking unbelievable.
Wait, what's pre-production code?
So the production code, the Hays production code, which was instilled between like, I think 1934 and like 1967, which basically was all about censorship. Hollywood basically couldn't release movies that had, you couldn't have like interracial couples. You couldn't have anything like sexy on screen. You couldn't have like overt violence. Any sexuality had to kind of be implied or suggested that you couldn't like have any sex on screen. It's why like so many movies from like the 50s and 40s are just like not that racy, like, and you don't see sex on screen until like 60s? You know, the late 60s. Yeah, so it was basically just a way to censor movies, and then it was lifted in 1968. Sorry. I want to say
that sounds about right.
And
around then, and then you see all the 70s, the wave of male, but auteurs who are, you know, show sex on screen sometimes well, sometimes not. Either way, it's at least shown. There are some movies I love older. We never cover older movies.
Oh my God.
And so it's always like, Jane has never seen any movies, but they're all just, no one.
Can we
watch them?
Can I come back in like a year or whenever you'll have me? And can we all talk about An Unmarried Woman, which is my favorite?
That's such a good.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I know we got to go back to
Selma
Louise. Oh my God, please. I mean, if you have it, have the guest, whoever the guest you want to be, I'm completely wasted, obviously, clearly.
Stop apologizing.
But An Unmarried Woman is one of my favorite movies. And then I also love Broken English and Swingers. But like, first and foremost, for women's sake, I think An Unmarried Woman. Just you guys watch it. Talk about it with whoever you want. I'm available. But whatever. A great next Bechdel cast.
A few older movies that I would recommend before we do get back to talking about Thelma and Louise.
I like how I've become like the weird like podcast Nazi where I'm like, we have to say Unscheduled.
No! Someone has to do it.
Because you're fucking with it. You know what you're doing,
yeah,
girl.
Yeah, Caitlin is together. but two movies that I absolutely love. The first one, I need to rewatch, but I am not convinced that it passes the Bechdel cast, the Bechdel test. Whoa.
We're also wasted.
I'm very not entitled. You think the whole world.
It doesn't pass the Bechdel cast. The Women, which came out in 1939, which literally
if I'm remembering correctly, there is never a man in the movie. It's so good. And it's, if there is a man, I mean, it's very brief. But this movie, I do not think passes the Bechdel test.
Well, because they're talking about men the whole time?
Because they're arguing about men the whole time. But it is directed by George Cukor, who was considered the women's director of the time. And he did make a lot of great movies with powerful female protagonists. It's also an early Joan Crawford movie. It's really good. And then the other one that I watched recently is Gaslight, which is an interesting movie for people who are either have been in abusive relationships or are interested in learning where the term gaslight comes from, because it literally comes from this movie. It was like a play first, and then it was a British movie in 1940, American movie in 1944 with Ingrid Bergman. But the British version is really, really good, and it's about this husband who slowly convinces his wife that she's crazy so he can get away with cheating on her and, in classic 1940s style,
anal sex.
Stealing her jewels.
Oh, stealing her jewels.
Stealing her jewels.
Or at the end, me.
At the end, like, he's like, I've been stealing your jewels the whole time. And she's like, I'm not crazy. You've been stealing my jewels. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of abusive relationships.
Here we go.
Sorry.
Here we go.
Oh, it's the podcast dictator. Speaking of that type of relationship, though, one of my other favorite scenes in this movie is when Louise is like, Thelma, you gotta call Daryl, see if he knows anything. Because at this point, they suspect that the police might be onto them because they've committed several crimes. And she's like, if he acts weird, if he does something, like, hang up right away, because it means the police know. So Thelma calls. She's like, hey, it's Thelma. And Daryl goes, Thelma, hello. And she hangs up immediately because she knows he would never answer the phone like that under normal circumstances because he's such a bastard. And it is just
That's me drunk. I'm sorry. I just had an Instagram me drunk. I'm sorry.
Lexi is... I've never felt this good in my whole life.
I'm still listening.
I don't need therapy. I have a podcast.
Me
this
too.
Is my therapy.
Let's get a t-shirt. I want to make a t-shirt so bad.
But for the podcast?
Of anything. Of anything. I want... That's why I keep buying all my friends' I'm wearing my friend Gina Winbrandt's t-shirt. We're talking about pre-pod. But pre-pod. Everyone check out Gina Winbrandt. She wrote this amazing book called Someone Please Have Sex With Me. And also buy her t-shirts because she's very... She's like so talented and she's in Chicago. And it's like, my friend, I can't see you.
Oh. Does anyone have any final thoughts about the movie?
If you haven't seen this movie... Please see this movie.
We've spoiled everything, but
we've spoiled,
go and see it anyway.
But like watching the dynamics between these characters unfold really is a masterclass. Not in just in like movie writing, because I remember when I was in film school, like they
went to film school too.
Sort of. I technically majored in radio, but I took a lot of film classes.
Hey, you're living your dream right now. You have a podcast. We all are friends now. You're going to give me notes on my script, and you are too.
Yeah.
You're gonna
I do that professionally.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, my God.
Shout out to Caitlin.
You just made the biggest mistake of your life, letting me have your email address and letting me touch your arm.
I'm very expensive.
Yeah. Oh, no. I've got nothing.
I'm pretty reasonable. I've compared to other people who provide similar services.
Oh my God, I can't afford it.
We'll talk.
any amount of money?
Can't afford it.
I'm just going to finish my third free Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Oh my God.
And invite you onto my podcast payment for this. Okay, keep going. I'll try to finagle something out of you.
Okay.
Yeah. Pointing to Jamie. But okay. I'm sorry. What's going on?
Wait.
So any final thoughts?
This movie is great. Oh, yeah. I was told, like, even when I was in film school to read the screenplay to this movie just because it's such a great exercise in, like, story structure. Mm-hmm. So all you story heads out there.
Story heads.
Shout out to my story heads.
What up, story heads?
Baby, baby. I have a big story head following.
Sure.
So to all my story heads, read this movie and see this movie just because it portrays women in a way that is not skewed or insane, and you know, like, these characters are making drastic choices, but they're all very grounded, and you don't see that a lot. Everyone see this movie.
To that, I would like to add that women are so rarely written well, or at least written interestingly, because different times we've discussed a movie where, like, the one woman character is a badass, like Trinity from the Matrix, but she's not necessarily
she can kick.
Yeah, she can kick. It's my favorite leather coat, and she's cool. And she might have some quippy lines of dialogue, but she doesn't really feel like a real person. Like, these two women feel like real women. It's just so refreshing to see that on screen. And sometimes, you know, I don't mind it if a character's just like, I wear cool sunglasses and I punch people and I have a cool line of dialogue.
I'm over it.
It depends on the genre. Like, sometimes it's fine. But yeah, I just love this movie so much.
In regards to the only kicking female in a lot of action movies, I feel like I've said that a couple different times, like I kick. And that is completely lifted from this really good McSweeney's article that everyone should read called As the Token Female Member of This Action Adventure Team, My Job is to Kick. And it's by a writer named Juliana Gray. It is so fucking funny. It starts, I wear black leather pants. I wear spike-heeled boots. When I kick, I pivot like a goth ballerina and drive a heel into a villain's face. It is 100% every token female action hero, and yeah, it's so good, so read it.
I would just like to say, Caitlin, I apologize for not respecting you accepting money for your services, because you're a woman and a human being and you provide a service, and the fact that I'm trying to not pay for it is really fucked up. Just want to say that. Second of all, thank you for letting me be here. And
thank you for coming.
We're so happy you're here. And for, you know, mucking up your podcast, taking it down a notch or 12, talking about boys.
Yeah,
only,
haven't you heard
much.
We are very highbrow.
Yeah, I know. And I ruined it today, no, but no. I will get better, okay? It's a work in progress. It's all part
wonderful.
Of the journey. Another thing that I would like to say is Thelma and Louise made me want to go on a road trip with the best. Well, A, get a best friend, okay? Go find a car that could manage to drive and go on a road trip. Fucking murderer, misogynist, rapist. Mainly have sex with somebody like Brad Pitt and then drive off a cliff and kill myself. Like, that's how moved I was. And now knowing that the misrepresentation of women in film is like so intense and heightened makes me want to like even more inspired to make the movie that I just wrote and fucking find Gina Davis and like make a movie that's like the modern. There are not enough Thelma and Louises now.
Mm-hmm.
We need
Amazing.
More Thelma and Louises. So I'm inspired. Here's another thing that doing this podcast today made me feel. I have to share my feelings sloppy and tipsy styles. And by the
this
way,
this is therapy.
I have lots of things I want to be doing and aspire to in my life. But then I realized the joy I experienced just sitting here with you ladies and being in the moment, talking about stuff and living my gosh darn life. Just made me realize what life is all about. Just having fun time meeting new girls, like drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade, like talking about feelings or whatever, okay? You're welcome.
That was beautiful.
Honestly, I will never be back, okay?
No!
Let me come back sometime.
Yes. Anytime.
I'm like feeling really good right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to the opera tonight, guys.
That's so hyper.
You can read my clickbait article about it probably by the time this episode comes out.
Sorry.
This is how I make my living. Okay, don't nag me. I gotta pay for things.
I get it. I have to overcharge for script analysis. I get it.
It's complicated.
Anyway, Alexi, it has been the biggest pleasure to have you here.
The best.
Is there anything you would like to plug, or where can people find you online?
I just want to say I love both of you. You're both my new friends. I want to invite you to be on my podcast. It's called Love Alexi on Nerdist. Aristotle is also my producer. And I'll see you on the other side.
Hell yeah.
Oh my gosh, there is another end to this rainbow. Oh, can we just all assume we gave this five nipples?
Right. We have to... Does the movie pass the Bechdel test?
Yes.
We should address that.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
Pretty much any scene where Thelma and Louise are together, sometimes they do talk about Daryl and how he's a piece of shit. Sometimes they talk about Jimmy and how he also kind of sucks. They also objectify JD quite a bit. But most of their conversations are about their plans on how they're going to handle the situation they're in, the trip that they're going to take before everything goes to shit, etc. What's happening, Jamie?
I'm sorry. First of all, I'm drunk. Second of all, I just got so close to the mic on accident, like I might like that. I smelled it.
Ew! Is it smell bad?
No, it smells kind of good. It smells like people's thoughts.
Oh, good.
Ooh. But I got so close that my nostril was resting on the mic, and then I inhaled like deeply.
Quick pitch, real quick, before we throw about to Caitlin. What if a whole movie happened inside a woman's head when she's overthinking? And she's like, what did it all mean when he didn't take me there? I think this is what happened.
I'm glad we have this on audio.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you have to write this.
This is your idea. Oh, this is yours. Do it.
All right. Well, on this plane, babe. I got to get out of here.
All right. Movie passes the Bechdel test. No question about it. We rate the movie on a... God, how do you talk?
It passes. It gets 15 nipples.
Nipple scale. Yes, I give the movie 5 nipples.
5 nipples.
Alexi, would you like to rate it on our nipple
scale? Fully 5 nipples, Thelma
cool.
Louise.
15 nipples. I love when we have 15 nipples in the room.
Thelma and Louise, super movie, very well done. We love it.
Let's forget 12 pack of Mike's Heart every time.
Yeah.
Yes. Listen to Alexi's podcast, Love Alexi. Alexi. Listen to our podcast, The Bechdel Cast. You can find us online on Twitter at Bechdel Cast. You can email us at TheBechdelCast@gmail.com.
We read the emails now.
We do. We forgot that we had an email account, and then we were like, oh, no.
We're like, the emails.
We've got
her emails
from fans. Oh, no.
Everyone's complaining about our emails.
Right. It's a scandal.
Yeah.
Yes, please email us. We will. It might take us some time to write back, but we
stop talking about our damn emails.
Everyone, just, man, don't drive off a cliff.
No, stay on the edge of that cliff and just fucking live, man.
Live on the edge.
Live on the edge of the cliff and then grab your best friend and give her a little kiss on the forehead.
Yes.
Mm.
All right. I think that'll do it.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.